Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey everyone, welcome to the 345th episode of Just Shoot It, a podcast about filmmaking, screenwriting, and directing. This episode is brought to you by patrons Nathan Blackwell, Turtle, Ethan Eskelson, and Benjamin Willis Teff. We're going to talk more about you in a second, but before that, I'm Oren Kaplan.
And I'm Matt Enlow, and I want to give Nathan, Turtle, Ethan, and Benjamin a heartfelt apology because through some error on certainly my part, because I'm the only person who touches the Patreon, we saw that you guys were putting in $15, but did not realize that, oh, shoot, we owe you 4 hats. So that's on me. I apologize. Your $15 hats, they're in the mail.
They're packaged. I just bought some brand new packing tape. Just a little bit of context. At the end of last year, we decided to raise the price from $15 to $20 for the Just Shoot It hats because just seemed to be the right thing to do at the time.
Inflation, you know.
Yeah. And then we were getting people at the $15 level, and I was like, okay, well, that's nice. Weird number to choose, but yeah, I appreciate it. I guess it's what our hats used to cost, but maybe these people don't want hats. And then just yesterday, I checked our Patreon page, and I noticed that we never actually changed the price of the hats. Here I have been not mailing hats to all these people that joined at the hat level. And Nathan, Turtle, Ethan, and Benjamin are the last people. Nathan Blackwell's been a listener for a long time.
Long time. Long
very time. Apologized. Turtle, he was on Entourage. That's all I know about him. Ethan sent me a message on Facebook and said, hey, here's my address in case you want to mail me the hat.
And Ethan, he's from Sacramento. Shout out, Ethan.
Yeah, well, not everyone's perfect, you know. Matt's from Sacramento, too, just so you guys know. Yeah, Lady Bird is pretty much about Matt.
It is about me. Yeah, yeah.
Anyhow, today we have Claire Scanlon on the podcast. She is a director that has directed everything, basically. She started out as an editor, was an editor on The Office. She won an Emmy for that. You know, she's part of the ACE, Honorary Guild, like the ASC, but for editors. Since then, has directed Kimmy Schmidt, Brooklyn Nine-Nine, The Good Place, Mindy Project. She edited the pilot of the Mindy Project.
Trophy Wife, Suburgatory, Hello Ladies, Modern Family, Son of Zorn, Last Man on Earth.
Fresh Off the Boat, Blackish, Never Have I Ever.
Ghosted.
Glow.
Good Place, Never Have I Ever, Miracle Workers, Rutherford Falls. Anyway, so it truly all of the best comedies in the last 10 years. It's really, really awesome. So exciting to have her on the show. It was a real treat to talk to her. She's got a new movie out. Available on Amazon November 18th.
The People We Hate at the Wedding, starring Kristen Bell, Allison Janney, Ben Platt, Randall Park's in it. I mean, pretty much every actor in it is famous. Before we get into it, I want to let you know how you can get your own Just Shoot It hat at the $20 level on our Patreon page, patreon.com/justshootitpod. It's a place you can go. If you like this podcast, if you feel like you're getting anything out of it, give us a dollar or two. We will spend it on paying our editor, paying for our various things that cost us money. At $20, you can get a hat. It will be personally mailed to you by me. Maybe one of my kids will draw something on the box. But yeah, patreon.com/justshootitpod. Check it out.
Without further delay, except for perhaps a word from our sponsor, let's talk to Claire Scanlon.
Hey, If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Well, Claire Scanlon, thanks for coming on our podcast. We were very excited to talk to you because you've worked on like every single awesome show ever, and you came up through editing, which is really cool. Like it, you know, makes us feel like you really know how comedy works, you know, like from like a basic component level. And you just directed a new movie, The People We Hate at the Wedding, that's coming out on Amazon Prime on November 18th. Can you tell us a little bit about like how that movie came together?
Let me just say thank you so much for having me. A woman named Ashley Fox, who worked at a company called Film Nation, once upon a time went to a wedding where she met somebody, I want to say, who mentioned this book, People We Hate at the Wedding. And she was into her cups, I'm going to say, but it stuck with her. And she read the book, loved the book, optioned the book from Grant Kinder, and then had Wendy and Lizzie Molyneux create a script for it. And Wendy and Lizzie are very well-known comedy writers who work on both Bob's Burger and created The Great North. So they're very, very ensconced in the comedy world as well. And I read that script. So I got that script. I don't know if it went to a lot of people, but I read it and immediately appreciated its humor. And I really liked its poignancy and heart as well, because for me, especially in a long form comedy, you need a skeletal structure upon which to hang the jokes. Mm-hmm. And like in The Office, you have a vulnerable Michael Scott who, yes, is a buffoon every day at work, but that's because his mom screens out his calls at night when he's all by himself in his office. And you you see him in that vulnerable moment, and then you root for him, and you don't care that he's making horse's ass out of himself every day at the office to find a friend. You know, so mm-hmm. For me, I'm always looking for those kinds of stories that do have heart and have a point. And this had all of that in spades. And it was like a, you know, three siblings and a mom. And that's the story of how they all came to be drawn apart in their dysfunctional family way, and then reintroduced to each other in a hotbed of alcohol and a party at a wedding.
Mm-hmm. High stakes too, right? It's like a wedding, is a great spot for
a wedding. A wedding is just, I mean, inevitably it's, you know, high drama, like even in like real life, there's, especially when it's a destination wedding, you're already feeling shitty about yourself. You know, that's usually when someone finds a a friend and they go hook up. You know, that's usually when you don't want to be alone, or at least that's been not my personal experience, but what I've witnessed at many, many weddings. Lots of inadvertent hookups late at night.
Were you a fan of wedding movies? Like, as you're talking through it, I was like, oh, that's right. There's a lot of wedding movies that I love.
Yeah. And I think that the reason why it's like, again, like you get so many opportunities to explore these like heightened situations where you can throw lots of disparate people at a situation with alcohol. Again, keep coming back to alcohol, but I do think that that helps, you know, if you're feeling great, then you're feeling sappy and romantic and happy for the person getting married. If you're feeling less than, which a lot of people are when they're like, well, they have happiness and I'm not anywhere where achieving any of the markers, but we're the same age and there's a lot of to compares to despair going on. I think that makes it, you know, just a perfect, you know, fertile territory for a comedy. And of course the biggest one that comes to mind and for me is Four Weddings and a Funeral. This one was shot in London as well. So it was always like the big
looming,
you know, elephant looming in the room.
Sure.
But, you know, I don't mind having that one. I mean, we actually shot a scene at the same place where Andy McDowell and Hugh Grant have sex for the first time at that wedding, where she then leaves him and he's like, whoa, why are you leaving? It was this great place called the King's Arm in Amersham. And it's just like from the 1400s and reeking of culture and history.
And Hugh Grant. I mean, yeah.
And Hugh Grant.
Yeah.
Floppy hair and low ceilings. And you hit yourself on the door jamb because they're short in the 1400s.
So this movie, is this your third feature that you did?
I don't know that people would count Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. Kimmy versus the Reverend. I would count that as possibly the hardest thing I've ever done, which was technically a movie, but no one ever counts that as a movie.
That's the choose your own adventure.
It's a choose your own adventure. Yeah. It is a weird thing that broke my brain. truly broke my brain. Hardest thing I've ever done.
People call it the Black Mirror of comedy.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I talked to the director of Bandersnatch. He was really encouraging. But it was hard. Set It Up was the first feature I ever did, and it is streaming on Netflix. And I think it was great to come across someone like Matt Brodley, who was like, this is a good script. You seem like you know what you're doing, Claire. Go for it. And he really greenlit the project right away. It fell apart at MGM. So it was in turnaround. And I was like going everywhere to try to pitch it to different people with the producers and the writer, Katie Silverman, the producers, Julia Berman and Justin Nethy. And it was like, people were like, oh, maybe. And then in the room at Netflix, greenlit, boom, done. And of course, I didn't believe them. I actually, we were in New York prepping and I went off to Lynchburg, Tennessee, I think, is where Jack Daniels is made. And I did a Jack Daniels commercial because I was like, yeah, I'll believe it when I see it. And we were in prep, but that's how I just was jaded of things actually coming to fruition. So
So people are prepping. You're like, I'm going to go do this Jack Daniels commercial.
Yes, but that's exactly what happened. And I was like 7 months pregnant.
Were you skeptical that it was going to follow through because you'd had previous movies that fell apart?
I just feel like the feature world is very different than television. And just, I think that's just my personal like way of like being superstitious in a weird way. Like it's never going to happen. It's never going to happen. I'm going to go through the motions. I'm going to do my job, but like, I don't believe it. It won't really happen. And then it kept happening. Like, and then when we're on day one, and then I was like, when we started shooting on day one, I'm like, I think this is happening. But I really was cautiously, I don't know. I wasn't even optimistic. I was just like, not jaded either. It was just kind of like tempering expectations. So I wouldn't get too sad. You know, I just didn't want to get too excited.
Yeah.
It's like keeping it calm.
Yeah. I feel like in commercial world, like my EP back in the day would say just like, until you're booked, like, and basically on set, just tell people you're available. You know, there's always this like, well, I might have this thing coming up, so I'm going to tell people I'm not available. And then like everything falls apart and then you have nothing. Okay. So, this was technically maybe your second like kind of regular non-interactive feature. Right. Now there's this article that came out in 2018 in The Ringer. Claire Scanlon directed every comedy you loved this year.
And just to give you the caveat of that, you know, the movie was based on a website, and the website that Katie used was The Ringer. So it's very meta that the Ringer ended up calling me for an interview. I mean, I think it was all very genuine, but it was, I don't even think the person interviewing me knew that. Like, Lucy Liu is supposed to be the head of the Ringer, you know,
right.
The sports, I can't even remember the name of the guy who started it, the guy who was really popular on ESPN, and then he created a whole other thing, and then it became really popular.
Right.
But anyway, that was a tangent.
Yeah.
So I guess I'm wondering, like, you obviously you have this reputation as a,
as a person who directs all of your favorite comedies, right? Yeah.
And so when people come to you with All the People We Hate at the Wedding, which, you know, is based on a book, and like, is it already at Amazon Prime? Is there already like a Kristen Bell and an Allison Janney? Or like, what are the pieces? Like, where does Claire fit into putting the puzzle together?
Yeah. Where are you in terms of getting it made, basically? Yeah.
When I read the script, then I came on board. Ashley greenlit me as a hire, Ashley Fox. And then Ashley and I gave feedback to the writers. They went back and wrote another draft. It was just based on notes, my thoughts. And that's pretty typical when a director becomes attached to a project. They kind of give their feedback on, like, this would be hard to shoot. Like, there was a lot of scenes in the airplane. And I was like, that's very static. I was like, there's not much for me to do if there's, so I think they pared down some of the airplane stuff. I was like, let's bring in some split screens. So, you know, it's a little bit more dynamic. And that helped just with like the more sedentary stuff. So just like, it can be something logistical like that. Like, this isn't very visual, you know, there's just, but to, I don't understand why this person does that. Or is there a way to, you know, I don't know, tighten this up. This is a bit long. I'm all for, the audience is an incredibly intelligent group of people. Everyone's been raised on the canon of film and television. I'd rather them have to play catch up than signpost and then move on. And like, you're going to see this. You saw this. You just saw that. You know, like, I'd much rather, and I'm not saying that that's what they had done, but I'm always looking for places to cut more. And then at the time, Mike DeLuca's company was also a co-producer. So it was Film Nation where Ashley Fox was, and Mike DeLuca, and ironically, Ashley's husband, Johnny, was working for Mike DeLuca. So it was a co-pro with those two, and they were looking for a distributor. And then MGM was interested, as was Amazon. And there's no irony lost on me that Amazon won, which is great for the movie because they gave us a bigger budget. And then, of course, who knows what would have happened with MGM because they were absorbed by Amazon. So I guess Amazon wins anyway.
Like, sure.
So... at the time, Ben Platt was the first person that signed on.
And before you have Amazon, like, the movie is not financed until you attach an Amazon, right?
No, right. Because Film Nation does self-finance, but this one was too big. This one is a bigger one. They'd rather package it and find someone to finance it.
And like just out of curiosity, like, we're not asking for the numbers or anything, but how do you determine before you have the cast how big it is?
Yeah.
Because I know this one, it's like takes place in the US and London, but other than that, I feel like you could probably scale it up and down.
Right. And I think it's fine. It was $25 million, I think, the budget, and I think went up to $30 million at some point. Chandler will tell me if that's okay to say. I'm very much an open book, so I don't care. And Set It Up was $15 million. So this was double the budget of Set It Up. And
Set It Up was like a pretty dynamic, like a lot of locations, lot of cast.
By the way, Set It Up had 2 days of stage work to fill the tax credits. We were on set, I mean, on location. I really love that. I know it's harder, but I really love that. And this movie too, we shot 36 days and 37 locations, I think it was.
Oh, wow.
And no soundstage work, zero. Awesome. Not even, and I was so pleased. There was no stages available in London to do. They're like, well, we could do the night black cab scene on the soundstage. And I was secretly like, I hope you can't, because Aquaman, Ant-Man, The Flash, and sure. Like, my agent, they were all shooting and had all the stages. And so as a result, we used a process trailer and pulled a black cab all over, you know, all over London. And it's so much better for it. Like, what a great backdrop, you know, and all of our car work was process trailer. And so grateful for that. And I feel like half the time I can always tell when it's green screen or LED. Yeah, it's an LED screen. It'll look great. It looks okay. I mean, do you know the scene I'm talking about? It's great because, you know, in London, there's all these, it's like all this old architecture, this beautiful architecture, and these garish big billboards that are video screens, just like Times Square in the middle of like this gorgeous architecture. And so it like, they like flash on our actors' faces. It just, it's, that's what happens in London. You know, it's great.
I want to dig in a little bit because I think you've got a great example in terms of just like shooting practically. There are things that you probably wouldn't have shot a plate or like made the decision to have these kind of garish billboards lighting people's faces, or it'd be a technical issue or whatever, you know, you wouldn't have even occurred to you. Are there other examples of why you prefer location work to stage work in the rest of the film?
I think actors act better. Like a really blunt.
Yeah, that's perfect. Love that. Yeah.
I think they're better actors in a location. Like I just mean,
just since you won an Emmy for editing The Office, which is...
I know, we never left. It did. It would go all over deep in the heart of Van Nuys. There's like a whole section of like that one episode where Michael gets on a train. That's because we were by the ugliest train depot. Like it's like everything happened because of where we were in Van Nuys.
Right. But and that famously, right, like that set, you know, you could shoot 360 and it was, you know, like there's the mythological stories of like people having to work in the office for the first week and just kind of like answering phones, like that role playing sort of exercise
that Ken Kwapis made them do. Sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
So great. You know, I think it was perfect for the story you're telling there. Like, even I would think, like, if I were an actor on my way to work to Deep in the Heart of Van Nuys, I'd get pretty depressed too. It's like the ugliest part of it. It's not a, you know, it's on Satakoy. It's really, really bleak. Yeah. And it's not, it's just not a residential area at all. And so it's a lot of factories and industrial warehouses. So I always thought it was really good for the characters, you know, the actors to get into character going to the physical Chandler Valley studios. Mm-hmm. That said, I think that particular project really benefited from the lack of diverse locations, you know, mm-hmm. whereas both this and Set It Up, they both to me, like Set It Up is a bit of a love letter to Manhattan. And this one is definitely a Valentine to London. Mm-hmm. And if anything, it takes the piss on Americans. You know, the Americans come to town and make a bunch of trouble. It's not the Brits. So I think hopefully British people will love this movie.
Sure. The Americans are the people you hate at the wedding.
Basically. Correct. Right. They are. Absolutely. It's and specifically it's Kristen Bell, Ben Platt and Allison Janney, three delightful people. So to see, you know, everyone turn on them is like, what's going to happen in order for that to happen? And it's worth it. I mean, that they are worthy of landing in jail.
Yeah. Yeah. Kristen Bell's pretty mean. She's pretty mean in the movie.
She has a lot to work from. What's great about her is that it's really hard to root for someone who's behaving badly. Mm-hmm. You know, she is like, what is that called? Like she's just, you know, the anti-heroine basically. Mm-hmm. And you're not used to that being her in general, you know, and even in Forgetting Sarah Marshall, it's hard to not like her. You know, she's supposed to be unlikable and she's so likable. And I think the same holds true for this film. You know, so you're able to almost, it's that same thing I was mentioning about Michael Scott. Like, yes, she's doing some pretty unlikable things. However, you see her in a moment of vulnerability and you see how low she feels about herself. So usually people with low self-esteem are also reinforcing that with bad behavior. You know, and she can't seem to get herself out of that whole vicious behavior and self-sabotaging.
Right. And so, go ahead, Matt.
I was going to say, so speaking of the cast, it's a really awesome group of people, right? But, you know, it wouldn't take a genius to take a look at that cast and go be like, oh, I see, like, you worked with this person in that TV show and that person in that TV show. And that's both, that's true for Set It Up as well. How much of the relationships that you kind of built maybe while you were shooting television, did that, is that just coincidence? Are you vouching for them? Are you giving them a call? How do you put those
flat out with together? Kristen? With Ben, I'd never met him before. Mm-hmm. Ben, I didn't know. I mean, I saw him perform on stage, Dear Evan Hansen, but it was incredible. I'm not of that musical theater world. I don't know anything about musicals, which is ironic since both Kristen, everyone's like, are they going to sing? Are they going to sing in your movie? I was like, just a comedy. So once Amazon had won that bid, as I mentioned, they were like, hey, we like these people. And I was like, well, I like Kristen Bell and I actually know her because our kids went to preschool together and briefly. And also I know her from The Good Place. Why don't I just reach out to her directly? Because let's be honest, more often than not, that's the fastest, best way to get to somebody is just go to them versus like reaching out. Because I also kind of knew, I'd already thought about her for this project and her agents were, one, it was COVID and still is, but also her agents were really clear. She doesn't leave LA. And so I said, I'm just going to ask. And I shot her an email on a Friday night, forgot that it was Mother's Day weekend, even though I am a mother. And I said, hey, wondered if you might be interested in reading this. You know, we're shooting it this summer. And she got back. She's like, yeah, shoot it. And so I send it to her. And the next morning, I get an email from her saying, how fast can you shoot me out? And I was like, that bodes well. And the answer to her question was 1 month.
And in London, too.
In London, shoot her in London for 1 month, and her entire family came. I do think that all of us being there, you know, with this idyllic weather, thanks global warming, but it didn't rain much at all in England, which also helped production. I think all of us being there, being kind of like in our like own little bubble, because we really were scheduled to such a degree that we couldn't have down days. It wasn't like Aquaman that like owned Randall Park for the whole 6 months, you know, whether he got COVID, it was fine. They just restructured. They just owned everybody. We literally couldn't have a shutdown. We couldn't have done it. It just wouldn't have happened. So, and we didn't. We were one of the few productions that didn't have a COVID shutdown in the fall of 2021. And it also lent itself to everyone really bonding. And you really get a sense of that, you know, as the family, you know, people hanging out and, you know, just staying at the same hotel and just going for walks together.
It's like a month long wedding, right?
Yeah, it was without the drama. All the drama was on screen. So my family was there for prep, but for shoot, they had to go back to school. So I was away from my family for 7 weeks, which I would not do again. Just then. I'm sure you can appreciate that. I wouldn't do that. That was dumb. And I now know that. Like, that was a huge learning experience for a working parent on a set. So I know that. I would say, like, my favorite surprise of this, like, I knew Ben Platt was funny, but when it was great, like, the crew didn't know everyone as well in England because they're British. So they're like, oh, he's a famous singer. But they did, and everyone was like, he's funny. Like, it was great. He was like a lovely, happy. I mean, I knew what a great actor he was. So I wasn't thinking, but it was fun watching the crew discover him, really. And that there were a couple moments like that. There were moments like that with Karin Soni, who's an amazing improv actor. And, you know, the writers weren't able to be on set, sadly. I wanted them. I always like writers on set. Katie was there every single day. She did an EPK at one point. She was gone for 1 hour. And she's like, that felt so weird. You know, I'm like, it was an hour and you watched the rehearsal. You're fine. But
I just want to dig in on that for a second. When you have a writer on set, are you ever like, I think there's like a funnier way to say that. Like, how do you use the writer on set?
I mean, I use them. I work with them nonstop and I'm just like, hey, any alts, any thoughts? This isn't landing. I think we should cut this couplet, you know, like just, you know, what I love about comedy is you can't fix it in post. If it's not funny on the day, it's not funny. You know, I feel like drama, you can color time it down. If it's messed up, you can add voiceover. You can have really cool music. You can thwart the chronological, you know, flow of the whole thing. can mess with the chronology of the scenes, but comedy, if it's not funny on the day, it's not funny. So that's the pressure of like, this isn't working, or, and I love that pressure. I mean, it's kind of horrible, but at the same time, when you fix it, it's like this great, uncomfortable feeling that I hate love.
That's what makes it so hard. But then also I feel like, yeah, you walk into a location and there's like a weird doorway or something. And you're like, oh, is there something about like the blocking or something that could be funny?
Yep.
That wasn't in the script.
Definitely done that. Yeah. Just inherently like on the High Line, it's a funny place, like just random people walking in. It's weird structures all over the place. And some of it is art. Some of it, you're like, what is this? Happy accidents happen all the time, which is great.
Can I just digging just a tiny bit deeper on the logistics of your process, is it something where you're asking for punch up after, say, a blocking rehearsal? Are you like alting in close-ups? How does that work for you?
If I go back a little bit, sometimes you do a round table at the script level with a group of comedy writers, and that's always helpful. Even if you don't even get that many jokes out of it, you're like, okay, a bunch of really talented comedy writers just sat in and we tried to punch up the script in any way, shape, or form, and it's pretty bulletproof at this point. Then you go out to shoot it, and then it's just like, yeah, exactly what you were saying. Sometimes you do as scripted, and usually I treat the script as Bible. And, you know, initially I really want that version. I very much respect what the writer did, and there's a reason why I signed on to the project. It's the script. And so, but then, you know, if there's like a fun run or alts, those are always fun. I mean, with Karin, we did it all the time. With Karin Sony, he couldn't help himself. And also because the writers weren't on set, sometimes like there was this one actor who Ben knew. I just wanted to make sure we had some good, you know, for me, everything's in reaction starting from my training at the office. You know, I have all the comedy plays and the reactions. And I just wanted to make sure on the breakup scene, they're on a boat. And I wanted to make sure that we had good people reacting. I was like, if you have any friends in town, just bring them and they can be background and I'll make sure to. And then this one was great. And so we gave him a line. And I was like, Karin, we need to give this guy a line. Like, let's work. And we, Karin's so fast and so funny. He's the guy who said, you know, Ben is losing his mind and shouting. It's like, you don't see me. You don't see me. And he's like, but we can hear you. And that was something Karin just came up. And it's funny. And he, you know, it was, and that guy was thrilled because I think that was his first speaking line in a movie.
Hey,
and he's a stage actor. He's a
nice
really
payday right there.
Yeah. And same thing with Randall Park. He came to set. He's like, I'll just be an Easter egg in the background because we're friends. So like we walk around Hyde Park and we didn't know what to. That was what I was saying. We didn't know what to do with ourselves. We weren't with our families. We're like, what do we do? We don't have unstructured time in our day. On the weekends, we like, I have like gymnastics and soccer. Yeah, I don't have any. I was like, what? It was kind of like mind blown. But so he finally came by on the very last night of shooting. He and Andy Buckley both came by. And Ben, I think, just finished shooting a comedy about a musical summer camp. And he had some jokes. And we gave a couple to Randall. And that's when he said, it's much better than, I'm going to forget my movie. Much better than that. Cats. Much better than Cats, where they were all played by dogs. I think it's so bad, I don't remember. It's been a minute. I've got a lot of other scripts in my head.
Sure.
TV shows I've done subsequently. But yeah, it was very sweet. And we just like threw that at him and he did it on the fly. He's wearing his own clothes. And I think there's something fun about that spontaneity. And that's very much something I got from The Office. And I think when you create a fun, playful, familial atmosphere on set, it carries over. You want to be careful. You want to be too much fun on set, but like it's still work. But at the same time, I think this like reverence almost can kill some of the comedy. You know, I once at a job interview said, you know, you can't be funny if you're afraid. I always try to make a set that's not scary. And then it was Jenji Cohen, and she's like, but you could be funny when you're terrified. Touche, you're absolutely right. she's Jenji, she can say that. She's absolutely correct.
Is that, I'm curious about that. So you probably meet with a lot of showrunners to decide, for them to decide
whether.
I
work with them too,
Right, or I mean, to be, as you're trying to get a job to direct the show. Yeah.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I mean, very, very rarely, unless I already know, like, for instance, on Not Dead Yet, Dean Holland knows me, but I didn't know Casey or David, really, who are the showrunners. And I had to meet with Abe Sylvia and Kate Taylor for Mrs. American Pie.
And what do you tell them to convince them that you're the right person for the job?
You know, honestly, like, I mean, I can make a joke or something, but the truth is, it's half the time I feel like it's just a chemistry thing, whether you click or not. So oftentimes that goes well. But another thing that I hope I'm known for is truly my preparation. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's what other, like, if you were to, like, ask a few of the showrunners that have worked with me, that's what they would say that I'm notable for, is the preparation, which allows for a more casual, calm vibe on set and allows for a certain playfulness once you've got the scripted version. Let's do a fun run. You know, let's go back. Let's try this. Let's have fun, because we're usually ahead. Mm-hmm. I'm not bragging. That's not always the case. These past 2 days have sucked because of the rain. We had all location shooting. We shot through lunch today. In order at 2:30, we knew the storm was coming, and we just, like, blew through everything. And we were working with Rhea Perlman, and she was phenomenal. So I work very closely with the production designer, and because usually on comedy television shows, I don't get much time with the DP. With the DP, like on a feature, I go through each and every scene with them. We have overheads, and we literally sit down, Oliver Stapleton and I, every Saturday. Like, we did as much as we could in prep, but then we ran out of time and had to start working. So then we would meet every Saturday, and we would get together, and we would just look at the overheads. We talk about dynamic starts, always looking for dynamic starts. I'm always looking for cool ways to transition from one scene into another.
What's an example of a dynamic start? Like,
a dynamic start, like, I'll tell you, in television, if you have a dynamic start, you better make sure your actors are also talking.
In the shot.
Show is 20, yeah, in the shot, talking, or talking and coming, finding the shot.
Right, so it's
just movement. So I would say, like, you boom down from something, you're tracking back, you're telling a story within the shot of the frame. You know, if someone's hungover, you start on a bottle of Tums, and you track back, and you reveal the person in the foreground of the, you know, it just depends on what the story is. I always try to tell a story in the frame with no words, mm-hmm. but then also then the next thing is you add the words. So, I mean, as an editor, if you did like a dynamic start just to like set the stage, and it's just like a beautiful shot of LA, and then you find you slowly tilt out to see your actors on the top of a hill, you know, mm-hmm. overlooking Legion Park. Well, mm-hmm. that's going in a 21:35 show.
That's that Joseph Gordon-Levitt movie.
500 Days of Summer.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, that's a movie.
Sure.
A TV show doesn't allow for that. So I would have to have Joseph speaking. They'd have to be talking. And then you find them already mid-conversation.
Right. Like a pre-lap, and then I'd have to basically.
Yeah, you pre-lap it. And then I'd have to cover my ass anyway and get them on camera doing it in case the showrunner's like, how the hell did you do that? I remember once doing Fresh Off the Boat. And I knew Notch, the showrunner, always like to be on the actors and no movement. Like, she doesn't love dynamics, or she wants to just like make sure the jokes land. And I did one, it was like a voting, it was like appropriate for today because it's election day, but Randall Park's character was hosting like a voting site. He was where people would go and vote at his establishment, his eating establishment.
A
polling place. Yeah. So I did like, it was all this like polling gear, and I just panned across the polling and landed on Randall. And I know she was annoyed that I didn't just have one that started on Randall. I was like, geez, that is the whole point of this is that his establishment is a polling place. And I was like, nope.
Like, but, you know, there's a story that. Reason you're not just being fancy in that case.
Right. No, that was not me being fancy. But you know, that's the thing about directing for television is every showrunner's got their picadillos, and not just amazing. So, you know, she knows the visual language of her show better than I do. I'm a TV journeywoman director. So mm-hmm. as many episodes as I can watch, I do. But then at the same time, so I just try to always channel the showrunner in situations like that. And then what's nice about features is that I am essentially the showrunner. So,
right.
you know, in television, the showrunner's king or queen. In features, the director is.
Do you find that, like, if you can do one camera move, it should be at the beginning of the scene?
Yeah, beginning or end or something. If something happens in the middle, but typically beginning or end. And then also When I was talking about transitions, I mean, the perfect example is Mike Nichols, The Graduate, when Dustin Hoffman's going through the motions and then he kind of lands on Mrs. Robinson out of the pool. But, you know, that's like thinking about how one scene transitions into another. And that's like the perfect example. But you can just do it lots of different ways. I remember like so many episodes of TV, I tried to like, let's transition, like, let's have a montage that's like constantly moving and you go out of one right to left into a black flag. And then you come in, you know, you put all everything together.
Like a wipe,
and so
yeah.
Yeah. So it's just constantly moving and you're telling every time. And I realize like, I always do a static version of that too, because again, when it was like glow or something, maybe I could pull it off, but because that's not exactly 21 minutes. But mm-hmm. in 21 minutes, it's so hard. I remember on The Office, it used to be 24:30, and then it was 23:30, mm-hmm. and then it was 22:30, and each minute hurt.
Sure,
they cut down.
Sure,
for more advertising.
Well, basically, it's just, you know, if you have to choose between a cool transition and a joke,
they're going to always choose a joke. Writers are in charge.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Unless the transition is funny, right? I mean, the worst example is like, we are not going there. Cut to, you're there, right?
Yeah.
The question that our friend Eric Kisek, who's been on this podcast a bunch of times, told me to ask you, which is probably, I'm guessing maybe the answer is connected to prep. I don't know. But he said to ask you what email you send to the crew before a shoot.
I do this. So I do the schematics, and usually in TV, I do them by myself. And I just think about those things I just mentioned, the dynamic start, where the actors need, where they need business that the actors can be doing that pertain to the scene. I just don't want people standing around talking. That's dull. And
do you think about lighting at all, like at that point?
Yeah. Like, for instance, we just shot a scene with these two characters, and it's the first time they've seen each other in 6 months and they used to date, and definitely wanted it to be slightly more low lighting, a little more romantic. I mean, it's in a pop-up bakery, so it was still pretty bright, but just like, you know, taking our time, had some push-ins, you know, tracking in shots, and it was sweet. It was a really sweet, such good actors. So it was Gina Rodriguez is very good. This was with Ed Weeks as well, and I know him from the Mindy Project, and it is kind of fun in comedies how it's a small world. But before, and I just sent this email out to the crew, I send the crew my schematics that I've gone through with the DP, and the one like half hour quick lunch I get with the DP on their poor DP on their break, because you don't have any time with them. I just say, you know, hey, you know, like, for instance, today it was like, shout out to locations for securing a lane closure and getting this great space to make this pop-up bakery in Culver City, and shout out to transportation who got everyone there safely, as well as the equipment. And, you know, it was kind of crazy weather. And
wait, so you send the email at the end of the day. You're like, hey, great day.
Yes. And it has tomorrow's work in it. It seems, you know, like, hey, it's shout outs and it's giving you a preview of the work tomorrow. It seems really great. It's a little, it's not as altruistic as it seems, because I'm getting people to already think about tomorrow's work. Mm-hmm. And, you know, every minute counts in production. So even if someone's saying, oh, I shouldn't put my gear over in that section, I should steer clear because the cameras are facing in that direction, that could save like 10 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, if someone doesn't know where we're shooting. Yeah. So every little thing helps. And then I tell them, I'm always looking for dynamic starts and cool things. If anyone has it, there's no idea that I'm not willing to listen to. I'm like, if you see something, say something. And I only look better if everyone else shines. Like, if I'm smart, I sit back and relax and let everyone kick ass. Right.
Yeah. I love that so much. And I feel like I'm seeing a little bit of a theme here, Claire, where you're just, there's a technique to keeping things efficient and light at the same time, right? Like, that doesn't happen by accident. And people always say like, oh, that, you know, it trickles down from the top, but you can't just be like a cool, mellow director and just hope that everything works out, right? So what are the things you can do to set things up to make sure that everyone is successful as possible, right? Because we've seen the opposite, right? Like, you see the director that's like, dang it, I told everybody not to put this here, and now I am screaming at them because I'm wasting 10 minutes because the gear's in the wrong spot or whatever. Like, you've seen that happen before, and it's such a bummer, right?
But also, like, yeah, I feel like screamers don't, that's the moment you shout or scream at grownups is the moment you show you've lost control. what I do when someone's very not good and they make a mistake is I wait till the moment passes, because there's nothing I can do about it in the moment other than fix the problem. Mm-hmm. And then afterwards, like way after, because everyone's calmed down, I pull them aside and I have a nice conversation and mm-hmm. say, let's try to do that differently next time. And if they don't, then it's another conversation. And sometimes there's a change made, you know, there, that's it. Like there, there's no need for high drama. I do think that, you know, the downside of what I do sometimes can be that I make it look like I'm not working hard when I am.
Oh my God, Claire.
That's what everyone says about Matt.
You're joking, Oren, but it does bother me sometimes when people are maybe a little less experienced is when they'll be like, well, that guy's not even doing anything. You're making the joke about like the best case scenario is that you sit back and like yeah. let other people, you know, just do awesome work. I'll speak up if something isn't going the way that I want it to go, but I don't have to be like pointing and like dictating every single thing because, you know, you all know what I want already. We've gone through it a couple times,
right?
You know,
right.
like I don't need to be standing in front of you watching you do it. And it does bother me a lot.
I think that some people are like, well, I could do what she does. It's kind of like the hubris that people have with actors. Like, I could act. Mm-hmm.
Sure.
You know, yeah. that looks so easy because yeah. they're good at what they, I could do that. I could do that.
Yeah.
And you know, that's an excellent, like Allison Janney, like I could, she makes it look, you're like, no, you couldn't. Like she makes it look effortless.
Yeah.
And you're just like, wow, is she good? You know, like she's just.
I had one last question. I actually was going to ask you something totally different, but the more I think about like how you're an editor and how you're efficient and how you do comedy, the more I'm curious, like something that I struggle with as a director is like, I want to make my day and I want to be efficient. But when I shoot comedy, I want to shoot like the entire scene at every angle, you know, like from the beginning to the end, because something funny might happen that I might want to cut to, or like there's a funny reaction.
Reactions. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But then there's the directors that are like, well, I already know what the cut is, you know, so I'm going to shoot for the cut. Like I know we're going to cut. They're going to look over here. We're going to cut to the POV shot. We're going to see this happen. And then like I don't need to do a 3-minute take. I can just do the 30 seconds of this take that I'm going to use and not waste everyone's time. Like I'm curious what your style is with that, knowing like as an editor, are you more like, let's get all the pieces and see how they fit, or are you more like, well, we're never going to use this, so let's only get these two lines on
camera? I mean, it depends. Like I mean, if it's a master, I probably wouldn't noodle with performance, but I would let it run all the way through. I wouldn't stop it, you know. Odds are they're never going to pop out to the master in the middle of a scene, but like that's a good time for people to lock into their lines. And you know, we did an extreme wide shot today, and we did do it a couple times just because I was like, they're locking in and it was beautiful. So I was like, well, what if we do use this the whole time? Like just in case. I'm a big fan for comedy specifically. And it's something that I always have to work delicately with a DP about is I'm for cross coverage. You know, for me, there's these moments. I remember I was cutting the Mindy Project pilot, and Ed Helms and Mindy Kaling are at Cicada, which is a beautiful restaurant. It was beautifully lit. Vilmos Zsigmond was the DP of her pilot, which is amazing. And Charles McDougall was the director, and he's amazing too. And I just remember being frustrated because you had these two very strong comedy people, and it was not cross-covered in any way, shape, or form. So I'm having to piecemeal stuff together. And I was just like, oh, they just cross-covered. You know, it would be... I know why they didn't. It's all about beauty. And this is just like, I am coming from The Office. It's going to be really hard to convince me that people watch comedy because they want to see beautiful people. I think people watch comedy to find something that makes them laugh, and relatability is what's key for comedy. And that's why Carol Burnett, who's a stunning woman, and had her own show and would come out in Bob Mackie gorgeous gowns, would be the most goofy one on set and be the first to like look like a ridiculous person. And you know, Carol was the first to do it. Like, you know, not the first person, and you know, Lucille Ball would do, like everyone just, the comedy giants are the ones who know, like, oh, it's not about how pretty I am. It's about how relatable I am. And don't you empathize with me because I'm going through all this. And it's the surprise. It's like Charlie Chaplin looks like a hobo, you know, he's a tramp, you know, and that makes him funnier. Right. So for me, I'm always like trying to make this case. I feel like I try to make it all the time. And so, and sometimes DPs will, I'll try to pick my battles. I'll be like, this is a really funny scene. And you have Will Ferrell and Steve Carell. Let's cross cover, you know.
Sure, yeah.
And on that one, even if you just had someone, just they'd be like, okay, two men, yes. They'd be like, okay, but you know, you have two women, and it's just a harder, and I want to honor everybody, but sometimes I'm just like, come on, we got to cross cover this. So that's always like a delicate, you know, tightrope that I walk.
Claire, so many good things. I'm like short-circuiting with how many good things to follow up with. I think there's something wonderful just about having that clarity of perspective for you, right? Like, everybody's got a kind of a different sort of ultimate aesthetic that they're dreaming of. But like, yeah, I guess it's so refreshing just to hear, you know, this is how I like to shoot, and this is the reason why. And I know why you like to shoot a different, but that's your thing. You know what I mean?
Right. Like, for instance, like in the more romantic scenes, we did not, sure, you know, cross cover. Like, if there's a there's a reason you want to have those look aspirational and beautiful and mm-hmm. wish fulfilling, you know. So it's not like I'm also inflexible myself. Like, there's times where and if I have a really good, like both with Matt Clark, who was the DP of Set It Up, and Oliver Stapleton, DP of The People We Hate at the Wedding, they're just so talented. If they, like Matt was like, we need a crane for this to find our first character. And all, you know, that would be when Charlie's running across the street to bring flowers to Joan Smalls, his girlfriend, and he brings the buzzer and she's not there. We're at 51st on the East Side and a big crane shot comes down, and it was worth it. And you want to have those moments in the first 20 minutes of your film. Mm-hmm. You want your audience to feel taken care of if this is that kind of a movie. And Set It Up was definitely a rom-com. So you wanted it to be a form of escapism. And hopefully it doesn't talk down to the viewer, because I tried really hard not to. And sometimes those films of that genre can. But you do want your audience to feel safe and secure. And mm-hmm. having a shot like that, Oliver Stapleton fought for a very cool dynamic reveal of Alice and Janney in a dressing room, like coming up and over and seeing them fall on the floor. You know, these are the ways you're introducing your, and that was all Oliver, you know, so like stepping back and being like, he's right. Oh, he knows what he's doing. It's also, it's just smart when you have like Oliver freaking Stapleton, you know, design the shot. You're like, yeah, I'm going to go with that.
Sounds good. Well, and I love the idea of front loading it a little bit as well.
Yeah.
Just in terms of like setting the table for people, right? Like,
exactly.
Wrap them up in a nice warm blanket of a crane shot, right?
Right. That. And I also think music is key in those moments too. Like, I've got you. Those are great ways to just calm your viewer down and be like, oh, there's someone I can relate to. Oh, that's a cool shot. But they don't even that's probably more subconsciously. They're like, oh, that's cool. There's New York. Oh, there he is running across the street. He's fucked. You know, like
right.
He's not getting into that girl's apartment. And then finally, like hearing something that kind of, you can kind of cheat a little. I try not to use music as a handicap, mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm. nothing too familiar or something new. In this film, once they get to London, I tried to have most of the music be British.
What's next? I mean, obviously you're doing a ton of TV. You're shooting TV today. Any more features, or is it really busy with TV?
I'm doing an Abbott Elementary in December, which I'm really looking forward to, because I met Quinta on Miracle Workers and she's delightful. And also she's a huge fan of The Office. So she got Randall Einhorn to be her producer director. And he did a million offices. And so that look of that show is definitely paying homage to The Office and Parks. And then there is a project that I'm working with Blueprint Productions with Graham Broadbent and Sarah Harvey, and Catherine Reitman is writing the script for a Studio Canal project called Bringing Up Bebe. It's based on this book called French Children Don't Throw Food. I don't know if you've ever heard it.
Bringing Up Bebe is it's just about how the French know how to raise children better than
children.
We do.
Yeah. And so it's written by Pamela Druckerman, and hers is anecdotal, and it's her own experience of mm-hmm. literally being thrust upon French society with her kid at four. And this is a more fictionalized version that Catherine took parts from the book and, like, you know, the concept of it, basically Pamela's life, and turned it into a narrative. And hopefully I'll do for Paris what I did for London and Manhattan. You know, that would be a really delightful thing to do. I'd really love to go to Paris and get paid for it.
Sure, sure. And bring awesome. Your family this time, right?
Yes, and this time I know what I'm doing.
That's right.
That's why they're in a French school right now,
yeah.
right?
Yeah. You're prepping don't think it's all a master plan.
Do you still do commercials too, or do you not?
I don't have done the one. I've never.
Oh, just the Jack Daniels?
Just the Jack Daniels when I was really pregnant.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I mean, I will say I have a wonderful independent media. Suzanne Pressler is the person I work with, and she gets all the projects. She's always like, when are you free? When are you free? And I do have a tendency to book up on television.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So.
Well, we love bidding against people like you that are not available.
It would be nice to do one, though.
Well, cool. Do you have just a few minutes to give an unpaid endorsement with us?
Sure, yeah.
Unpaid endorsements.
I'm going to kick it off with two endorsements. The first one, a little bit of a downer. Julie and Julia, the Nora Ephron film. People sleep on that movie. I know that most people don't love that movie. I love it. It's great.
Yeah.
It's great. I don't know if you heard the Julie that the film is based off of just recently passed away. So I thought it would be apropos to bring it back up because it is really wonderful. And she changed food writing in a really significant way. And there's a really great New York Times article about her passing. But revisit Julie and Julia. It's really wonderful. And then my next one is the podcast, The Screenwriting Life, with Meg LaFave and Lorian McKenna. They're two awesome working screenwriters. They come out of the Pixar world. I know the world is filled with lots of screenwriting and filmmaking podcasts, ourselves included. But these two are really craft-oriented in a way that I found really reinvigorating. It was nice to like listen to people talk about actual honest to goodness, like problems and solutions and techniques. You know, Oren's always talking about like, he always wants tips and tricks and like actionable things, where I'm a little more anecdote oriented. So I think genuinely you will become a better writer listening to The Screenwriting Life. If you practice the things that they're talking about, I think there's a lot of really great stuff in there. So
Claire, what are you excited about this week?
Well, I just finished. This is very on point. I was trying to think of something. I mean, other than the bumble bologna that I just ate, that was amazing.
That's a good one.
Like literally shot Nutella lava at me from Republic. I just finished the Mike Nichols A Life book. I'm sure you guys have read it, by Mark Harris.
No, I
haven't. Yeah. Oh, I thought this, like, you guys have to read this book. It's so good.
Awesome.
It's amazing. So Mark Harris is married. Not that this has any bearing. He's an excellent writer in and of his own. He's married to Tony Kushner, who did Angels in America, the playwright. But what was so great about reading it wasn't just, you know, learning more about Mike Nichols, but his process is so fascinating. And also what was really humanizing, because you think of Mike Nichols and you're just like, his first movie ever, Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, followed by The Graduate. You know, it's just crazy. But what was so great is just his failures. Like, it's good to read about the mistakes he made and things he did and how he got back up on his feet and how he approached things differently and how his career really, it really took a downward spiral in the 70s. He was making some very unusual choices. And then he paired up with Meryl Streep for Silkwood and Cher. He's the one who put Cher on screen first before anyone was like, she can do drama. He really, you know, found like kind of a new way of storytelling via women, you know, and he was clearly resisting that at first. And I just was like, this is mind blowing. You know, you think about him and you do think he's like a guy's guy, but then the second part of his career really was embracing more, I think, of his feminine side and a different way of telling a story than the very harsh ways he started. And it's a great book. It's just a great book. And again, I got so much out of how he worked in rehearsals and how he spoke to actors, how he worked with actors, how he messed up with actors, and how he, you know, had to pivot. And it just really great stories. Mike Nichols, A Life.
The V8 vacuum, one of my top five things I've ever bought, the Dyson V8. There's a new Target in Silver Lake, but the V8, which is the best vacuum you would ever want to buy. We've talked about it before. It's usually $450. It's on sale at Target right now for $280. So I don't know. If you've heard our endorsement and you're like, I want to get a good deal on it, Now is the time at Target.
Oren did talk me into this this vacuum once upon a time, and it is pretty nice. Yeah. Yeah, it's nice.
It's so good. Another random endorsement. You know, weather is changing. Where a lot of people are using their HVAC systems, you know, their heaters and their air conditioners. And I just feel like a lot of young people don't know that you're supposed to change the filter on those things. So if you feel like your system's not working well, that's probably what the problem is. And my last thing, I was just in New York last week, and I guess everybody knows this except for me, but I had like some black and white cookies, and I've had them before in my life, but like the ones in New York, it's just like a different thing. It's like New York pizza.
There's a Seinfeld episode about the black and white cookie.
That's what a lot of people were mentioning, but I just like these cookies just like blew my mind. They're like spongy on the bottom. And like I've had black and white cookies in LA and they're just like cookies. Who cares? But I don't know. In New York, I like literally brought a bunch back for my family because I wanted them to like me. Claire, do you tweet? Are you on Instagram or anything?
I am on Instagram. I'm so on it. I don't have a Twitter account. And okay. All of a sudden this week, I'm feeling very proud of myself.
Sure. Well done. Well done.
What's the new Twitter replacement?
Mastodon, I think, is the new one. But so yeah. Where can people, if people want to keep track of all of the cool things that you are making and putting out?
I think my name on Instagram is
perfect. Claire Scanlon.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much, Claire. If you have questions for us, you can tweet us at Just Shoot It Pod. We're across all social media at Just Shoot It Pod. So who knows? Maybe we won't be on Twitter for that much longer. You can find me at Mr. Matt Enloe across all social media.
And I'm at Smitey Pyleg on Twitter. I'm at O'Kaplan on Instagram. This episode was edited by Noah Bayshore. Our producer is Tyler Small. And you're listening to music from the Free Music Archive and the artist Jazar. And we'll catch you next time.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.